You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh. I'm so happy today to be talking with Jude Sandy. He is an actor, a dancer, such a warm and generous person, and I always come away from conversations with him feeling inspired and renewed. He always puts things in perspective for me in a really wonderful way. I hope you enjoy the 12th episode of The Compass.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
I really appreciate it. I love that no one else knows this setup that I have. The corner. It's in the corner of my bedroom. It's very tiny.
It's a beautiful, cozy little cave.
Jude has kindly folded himself into my little studio.
It feels like a place for telling secrets.
Good. Exactly as it should be.
Yeah.
So what is the dark side to you, and how do you keep yourself from going there as an artist?
Oh, baby.
We just start
Let's
out
just
with the
jump
big
right
question.
In then. Okay. I think, well, for me, the dark side is, it's very circumstantial, and it is caught up in my work in as much as my work is reflective of my life. Mm. A lot of why I'm an artist has to do with my experience as a person growing up in a very specific cultural milieu, and as a young gay boy in the West Indies, growing up Catholic, very faithfully Catholic, and having really intense spiritual connection with my religious practice, and therefore with the religious community in which that practice played out, at the same time knowing that I was homosexual from a very, very early age, and beginning to understand from a very early age that that was considered abominable and worthy of persecution by the people that were around me. The people that were reflections of myself, you know, you live in a society and the people around you are reflections of you, and they are you, you know, in a kind of a way. So I think that set off a kind of internal questioning that made me want to be an artist and someone who engages questions about what it means to be human. Mm-hmm. And questions about our purpose as individuals and as members of larger wholes. And so I think that when the dark side starts to creep, it's very much about those kinds of questions. And you know, we certainly work in a profession that, first of all, engages us on so many levels. And engages our humanity in such intimate and vulnerable ways, and that's both the huge reward and the incredible danger of what we do. That there's a certain kind of masochism that's involved in exposing ourselves in that way. And so for me, the dark side tends to come as a question of purpose and being. That is, am I being authentic to those things? And am I being authentic to, I think, a sense of purpose that I found for myself, which was about continuing along the path of that questioning, questioning myself, questioning mm-hmm. the society in which I live, questioning the way we establish the values that we pursue, and that we prosecute, and really kind of pushing a conversation about those things. So, and we work in an industry that is about entertainment.
Right, which is a whole other side of it.
Yeah. And for me, it's often trying to figure out a balance between those two things. You know, that what we do is part of an industry.
Right.
And that we do operate certainly as New York artists as part of an industry. And how do you try to hold on to some sort of integrity as you race around as in what can be a very fraught environment of people competing mm-hmm. for very very a sparse set of opportunities. So that's how it tends to show up for me.
Yeah.
As far as how do I deal with it?
In large or small ways. It could be very basic ways.
Yeah. I know that I can honestly say that I don't feel like I've... That in a lot of ways, my life is a conversation with that darkness.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it's ever evolving. I don't know if any of us have the answer.
Right. Exactly. And there are a few things that have proven helpful.
Mm-hmm.
One is knowing your tribe and trusting them.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for me, trust is a difficult proposition because we're bombarded, you know, and it's hard to know intent. The crazy thing about our business is that we fall in love with people again, with whom we're constantly in some sort of competition.
Hmm.
And so it's hard to maintain that contradiction, right? That
yeah.
constantly we're in a space in which, you know, we're being told that we have to promote ourselves, that we have to be our best agents, that we have to be constantly announcing what's the new thing that we're doing that's exciting, that makes us attractive, that makes us worthy of more
mm-hmm.
work at a higher level. You know, we're constantly trying to build that up. And so in that, like, I am climbing the tower effort, constant effort, it can feel difficult to reach out to the people who are also in the midst
right.
of that same yeah that
or to
same,
see each other quick like clearly
yes
through
yes,
all of that
yes and see ourselves as available to one another
yeah.
and see ourselves as worthy of demanding that of the people who we also love and support and who we want to be successful
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a tricky place that we're in. Yeah, that we inhabit. And I still haven't figured it out. One thing that I'm learning just now starting to figure out is a greater sense of clarity between the doing and the being. In that, you know, we in school and as we're learning and as we discover our passion for the work and for the profession,
mm-hmm.
you know, the vocation of the work, that we become actors and we become artists and we start playing with that personality and what it means to be this thing. And then we begin to define ourselves as such and according to ideas and ideals of what those things are. And then we hit real life.
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt too.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and real life is just so much more contradictory and so much less clear. And what I'm just beginning to learn now is, so you have the thing that you've decided you are, you know, that, and it's really easy for that thing to feel under assault by all of the realities. Mm-hmm. And having a real clear sense of, oh, this is what I'm doing right now, which may not necessarily have a fundamental reflection on who I am, you know. Right. So the jobs that you get, both artistically and non-artistically, you know, mm-hmm. the survival jobs versus the creative jobs, and
even the creative jobs might not be your cup of tea.
Exactly.
Or your purpose.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And having a sense of separation and a sense of care for the identity that you've built for yourself.
I see.
Yep. And preserving it from
be hard. I know I'm the best at beating myself up.
Yeah, right.
And it's such, I've tried to get better at it, because it's like you go in, you don't have the audition you wanted to have, and mm-hmm. It doesn't help to mentally assault yourself.
Right.
But it's easy to do.
Right.
It's
yeah. It's easy yeah. to do. And it's so it's so easy. And learning how to be gentler with that identity, because one, it's so fragile.
I love that. And not let it be taken away from you too.
Right.
By the constant affronts
right.
that we face
yes.
in this
yes.
business.
Yes. And I mean, certainly the experience that I've had over the past few years in New York, and New York has been kind to me. I've wrestled with that boundary a lot. I just for full disclosure, I'm in a really big transitional phase in my mm-hmm. life right now. And what I discovered was that you get to New York and very quickly people want to know what you are. Mm-hmm. You know, are you a TV film actor? Are you a theater actor? Well, are you a musical theater artist? You know, are you more a dancer than you are a singer? Like, you know, people want to have a very clear definition of what you are. And in my experience, what that did was made me like start cutting pieces of myself off, you know? So, you know,
to try to fit yourself in their definition.
Precisely. Because you're given a very clear path of what success looks like. Mm-hmm. And what it entails, that it entails a certain kind of discipline and a certain kind of clarity, and that people want it and you need to be ready to present it. You know, it's like, what's your 2-minute pitch of, you know,
yeah.
who you are? And yeah.
It's obscene.
Oh my gosh, it is. It is. And it's bizarre.
It would be nice if you could do that, but that's bizarre.
We're just so much more complex than
yeah,
that.
You're a whole lifetime of a person.
Yeah, precisely. Precisely. And I marvel at the people who have that sense of clarity, who are able to do that. And I'm so impressed by them, and who have a kind of singularity of purpose. What I've discovered, though, is that for me, what I'm just now discovering is finding really diverse ways of entry into the world for myself is helpful. So almost a complete rebellion from what we're being told.
Like
yes.
A...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And because what I found was that, I mean, I came into the theater as a dancer at an old age for a dancer and then moved from dance into theater. And after 3 years of grad school, found that what I was being seen as was more of a movement artist, and really mm-hmm. resisted that, because you get to grad school.
And you put in your time. You want to be seen as an actor.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And what was funny for me was that I actually did not go to grad school. I remember when I was applying to grad schools, it was not my intent to become a career actor, personally. It was as someone who had a dance background wanting to broaden the ingredients available to me for the creation of work. That's what I was thinking about when I started. And then you get swept into the profession with all the glorious things that are in it, and the camaraderie and the creation of the work and the collaboration and then, you know, the fulfilling of the work and the engagement with audiences and feeling useful, you know, that you've told these stories that are engaging people's minds and hearts, and you go, well, yes. Mm-hmm. And you go, well, okay, yeah, I can do that. I can do that. Yeah. You know? And of course, you spend, if you're you know, in grad school, you spend 3 years just doing that.
Yeah.
And then you get out into the world and the opportunities are, you know, select. Mm-hmm. To be able to do that thing that you just spent all this energy learning how to become a really good athlete at.
Yeah.
And then suddenly I found myself starting to cut off the thing that I initially went into it for, to try to fit into these streams of professional, you know, profiles. And I what I noticed over the past few years is that I've been just getting narrower and narrower as an artist. Hmm. And I would say, if anything, if the one, you know, big lesson of the 5 years that I've been in New York is resist that at all costs.
Yes.
I think there's nothing that takes us to a darker place than our narrowing or our diminishing of our full complexity. And I actually think what what's funny about it is that while the machinery of our industry suggests and really pulls us in the direction of that kind of narrow focus, specializing in things, the industry itself, the profession itself, the work itself doesn't want that. So we actually end up doing not only ourselves, but the profession, a disservice by narrowing ourselves. Hmm. And that, you know, we're told this in grad school, then we hit a hard reality that seems to contradict it. You know, that we're told in school, be your fullest self. And then we get into a situation that cuts us up, that feels like it cuts us up, and tells us you have to choose between things because this is what success looks like.
Right.
We're told.
Or even to be able to get a job, to be able to do it. And so of course you cut yourself up because you want to be contributing. You want to be useful. Like you said, like, of course we all want to be useful.
Right. Yeah.
And so to even be able to do any work.
Right.
If you feel like you had to narrow yourself.
Yes. Yes. That you want to feel that your energy is productively contributing to something.
Yes.
Right.
Productive. Exactly.
Right. But what I'm just beginning to discover, is that opportunities that may seem to disperse your energies, you know, like if you're told success looks like that, so you should be, you know, I've had professionals say to me, well, you shouldn't be doing that kind of work because that kind of work is not prized. You're going to get, you know, pigeonholed as that kind of artist, and you want to be this kind of artist. But the truth of the matter is take the opportunities. Take them all, because all they will make you is a more interesting person, ultimately. And there will be, and that will self-select your path for you. And it will actually just keep you authentic as an artist. And it will actually keep you more fulfilled as an mm-hmm. artist. Don't fall for the hype, you know, of, oh, you know, well, if you want to be in TV and film, this is what you have to do.
Right.
Because what I'm just now being reminded is that life just works much more mysteriously than that. And we keep, you know, being fooled by the formulas, and the formulas don't apply.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we hear the stories and the narratives are always tidied into this thing of, well, this person did this and then they did right. that and they went, you know, and then they were on Broadway and then right and then they, you know,
and if I want to be like her, I need to you do need that.
This is yeah mm. And the truth of the matter is, it's life is just alchemy. That's all it is. And you have, in my opinion, you have very limited control over how that plays itself out. And so take every gift that comes, and deny none of it, reject none of it, because it's all enriching, mm. ultimately. And I think it ends up just leading you in surprising places. And quite frankly, even the resistance leads you to surprising places that then just reinforce the thing of be yourself.
Yeah.
Actually do be your full self, because you'll do better work. You'll do more interesting work when you you might be thinking to yourself, well, I love puppetry. So, but I'm told that if I want to be TV and film, I need to focus on that kind of work. Do the puppetry. Because at some point you're going to accidentally meet someone who's going to go, can you do this here?
Right.
And it'll
it's all going to work out.
It will work itself out. I think we need to let go a lot more.
There's something very comforting about that thought. Because it is such a random business. And I think that's why people try to cling to so much control and to these theories.
Exactly.
Is because we have so little control that they're trying to make it into something that they can deal with.
Yep. And that there's actually so much possibility that people are just trying to carve mm-hmm. out what makes sense. And of course we have to seem like we know what we're doing.
Yeah.
And more often than not, we don't. I shouldn't speak for anyone. I don't.
We don't.
I don't. Yes. Yeah. I had this, you know, wonderful experience where I recently parted ways with my agents. Mm-hmm. And they thought, you know, they've been moving in a really wonderful direction. That's, I mean, it's incredible how they've grown and they've become successful in a way that is wonderful for them and is not really who I am. Mm-hmm. And we've had some great successes together. And for the past couple of years, it became clear something isn't quite working. And part of it, frankly, was mm-hmm. that I'd been trying to cut myself up into the thing that I thought that they would want.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there I was trying to carve myself up into this thing that I thought would be attractive to them and to casting agents. And mm-hmm. and if I could define myself, I mean, oh my God, we can't define ourselves. We elude ourselves constantly. As soon as we think we put a finger, at least, once again, I will speak for myself. As soon as I put my my finger on, like, oh, this is what I am, it becomes the exact opposite. We're just so much more complex than that. And so there I was trying to, you know, define myself for them and make myself clear, thinking for them, right? And pulling apart pieces of myself. And actually all I was doing was making it impossible to conjure the magic that is this particular human being. And therefore, nothing was happening. It stopped happening. You know, I had stopped auditioning. Mm-hmm. And it was clear that nothing was happening. So we finally had a conversation. And it was clear it was time to part ways. And the next day, I thought, because in me, I'd known it was coming. I'd had conversations with friends over the past year and a half going, maybe it's time for me to do something else and not be with my agents anymore because something's not working. And so, but then of course you think, but you have to have representation.
Right. And even if you think that, you're like, oh, well, I wouldn't mind switching to another agent, but you don't want to be without no one will believe you should have one.
Right. Exactly. Right. No one's going to take you remotely seriously if you don't have an agent.
Right.
And so when we had the conversation, I was thinking, well, I'm going to hang up. And at some point the terror and despair is going to hit. And actually all I felt was release. And it completely rearranged how I saw the past couple of years, because what it made clear to me is that, of course, your agents are going to try to, you know, figure out how they can sell you. So they will ask you to define yourself. But I actually wasn't doing them any favors in taking that on to myself.
Interesting.
Right? But you can play the game of, well, I'm capable of this, so I can shape a little for you. But as far as like trying to do that on yourself, in yourself, that's not helpful. And that's what I had done. And suddenly I was released from having to do that anymore. And what was, so I remember I emailed them the next day and I was like, look, let's be clear. We are even better friends now, because now, because we knew. And what happened was we finally acted on what we knew. Right. And we had this wonderful email exchange. And then an hour later, I get an email from a wonderful colleague who goes, can you come do movement direction for my production? And what was bizarre about it was the kind of work that I was resisting doing as I was trying to become a career actor. But it's actually the work I love. And it's like, yeah, do all of it. Do all. Do not try to isolate yourself out.
Define yourself.
Yeah, and it was the kind of work that I would have otherwise been really hesitant to take, because it's like, well, okay, that's going to be time away from New York when my agent might
be seen as that.
And then right, there he is, a movement guy.
So where did you do this? It was outside
at
New York?
Cleveland Playhouse.
Oh, okay.
For a production of The Crucible. And had an incredible time, and just was reminded of, oh, right, we are so much more than our websites.
Quote of the day.
Oh, my gosh. And isn't that liberating to know that you're more than your Instagram feed? Oh, my gosh. It's been such a relief. And bizarrely enough, but tellingly enough, I've actually had more people calling me to either offer me works off the bat or ask me to come in to be considered for things. I've actually had more of that in the past 2 months than I've had
this past year.
Yeah.
Something was freed up.
Something is freed up. So resist the temptation of shackling yourself to the imagery. Yeah. At all costs, just resist it. And what I love is that then it makes me think differently about my colleagues who I see who are doing, you know, many different things and are working in many different capacities in our field, you know, who are saying, I am going to write something, even if it's unpublishable or unstageable.
Right.
But it's just about engaging yourself in a different way and reconnecting with the fact that for many of us, when we started this, we started it to be complete artists.
Mm-hmm.
Not as mercenary, you know, freelance actors, trying to land a movie deal or TV series, which is not to at all demean that work, but it's part of a larger mosaic of who we are and what we're capable of.
And I think sometimes when we go through training, like a lot of us have, that's so specific for acting.
Mm-hmm.
We get, I don't know if it's, we're scared to try other things because we're not a trained playwright. We know what intense training is. So we're not a songwriter. But for your own artistry, for your own inner life, why not try it? Why not try it and fail and then fail better, whatever that quote is. And
right. Yeah, and for me, it's like actually, if nothing else, it's so informative to the reality that it's all the same work. That it is about how are we crafting our humanity. that's what it comes down to. I mean, what's been liberating for me is realizing that, oh, right, a director is doing the same work that an actor is doing, just from a different perspective with a different set of inputs coming in, you know, as far as, oh, right, they have to deal very specifically with designers and with the theater itself and with the space. And it's just about, you know, different levels of the same work. An actor also has to be thinking about the space and what the design elements are. Like, we're actually all on the same project. And I think
it's that hierarchy of, like, the power when you're getting the job that can come sometimes throw that out of whack. When, of course, we should, at least when you have the job, and ideally all the time, it should be a team effort and a collaborative effort. And I know that's what I miss a lot about grad school, is we were an ensemble. Mm-hmm. And there aren't many of those companies left where you do get to work with people for a year.
Well, the funny thing about it, too, is that even in those situations where it feels like the hierarchy is so solid and impenetrable, the opposite ends up proving true. I remember being in a production at a very established theater with a huge reputation, with a director who was known to be very strict, very authoritarian, and seeing how we all generally kind of fell into place as minions to his vision, and an incredibly intelligent director, and watching that director respond to people working very in very disciplined way, and actually being really kind of actually frustrated by people, and watching the one or two actors who understood that and transcended it to be constantly available to making suggestions in constructive and non-intrusive ways, that every time the director had a note for them, they were ready with, yes, and I can try this, and I can try this, and I can try that. Whereas I think a lot of the rest of us were going, just try to figure out what that director wants.
Right.
And do that.
Just take orders.
Just take the order. And what you find out is even the ones who seem to want you to just take the order don't want that. They want you to apply your full intelligence and actually have more. Mm-hmm. Yeah, have more. And to fulfill and transcend their idea. So, yeah. Don't be fooled. Just don't be fooled. It's not true. It's just not true. Yeah, yeah. They want us to be interesting. They truly want us to be interesting and full and self-possessed. Because that's what they respond. It's actually what they end up responding to.
Yeah.
And they want collaborators. They want people who they can trust enough that that when we all do get into the room together and they are being driven by all the priorities of a production, that we can be doing the magical work in between those lines, and create something that the production alone can't. Hmm.
This is all, it's so interesting, because exactly where you started when we started this conversation, talking about where you come from and how those shape you as an artist, this entire thing we've been talking about is completely in touch with that.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Completely in touch with what you kind of stated as your purpose as an artist right at the beginning.
Which I think that does bring us back to the beginning, because you were saying, what is it that takes us to the dark side? And I think what it is when we start losing sight of how all the things that we're doing are connected. Mm-hmm. To one another, when we start feeling separated and isolated out away from that sense of, oh, right, this is all working in some sort of harmony, even if we don't see it at the moment. I keep having these cyclical experiences of being brought back to movement and then brought back to singing and voice and then brought back to, you know, pure, in quotation marks, acting. And every time I'm like pulled in one direction, it actually just ends up reinforcing the whole. If I'm patient enough to to ride the rough wave.
Mm-hmm. How have you been finding, because something that this podcast deals with and something that I'm trying to deal with is like, how do you then factor in the financial part of your life? Because I also feel like I've done so many projects over the last 2 years that I'm incredibly proud of that maybe only 100 people saw or made me $25 for 2 months of work
mm-hmm.
with peers and with artists that I respect.
Mm-hmm.
And I see the success in them, but uh-huh. then there's that little voice in the back of your mind that, of course, wants to make your living from your art and not have to have another income. Like, how do you deal with that part of it? And part of, I think, coming out of the dark side, like you're saying, is like finding the balance and being involved in all these different parts of yourself and appreciating them. But if they're not making you money, what do you do?
Yes. And this is exactly the transition that I'm in.
Yeah.
Right. We're, now.
Yep.
So I'm excited to dive into this one.
Okay.
Because I think it's really important for us to look at the world with clear understanding of how it's operating, what it demands of us, and whether or not we're willing and able to run along with it. And I know I'm in the midst of making big decisions about what my future holds, but it's hard to talk about in a way that's diplomatic. I think artists need to find the places that are right for them. I think artists need to have really blunt conversations with themselves about are they in the place they need to be to do the work that they need to do. And I think if we, you know, we're sitting here in New York City, if we're really honest about that, many of us would leave this town.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is a difficult place to create work. It's a difficult place to not be a wealthy person.
Yep.
And somehow be able to move forward as a creative creature. And I think some of us can do it. I think some of us are capable of, you know, joining into to the race. And some of us are equipped for it, and some of us are good at it, and some of us are energized by it, and more power to them. But I think some of us don't belong here. And
that's the place you're in. You're trying to figure that out now.
Oh, I figured it out.
All right, then you haven't made your move yet.
I haven't made my move, but I figured it out.
Okay.
I believe that New York City is no longer a place for the struggling artist. Regardless of what my financial history or position is, my solidarity is with the work and the livelihood of the struggling artist. And therefore, I personally cannot continue to be a contributor to a place that is not for that person. My own spoiled brat says no. So I do intend to leave New York.
Mm-hmm.
I have come close to knowing where the next step right. will be, because I have a much clearer idea. And thank you, New York, for making it possible for me, because I think the experience of New York is a fundamental one. I think certainly even now every actor should spend some time here. Every artist should spend some time here. But because it helps you, it demands that you clarify what your purpose is. You must
and it's so come interesting because it, you know, how places change.
Yes,
because it's still, I mean, it's a wonderful city in so many ways, and
it's an incredible city.
It is full of, you can walk through art every day.
Yes,
and all these amazing things happen here, but the basic living situation has changed so much financially.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I still, all the time, you know, I'm walking around going, one of the most incredible places on the planet. This is not
But you shouldn't have to pay, you shouldn't have to not be able to have a savings account. You shouldn't be able to pay so much a month that you have to work and then not get paid for your art also. It's such a bizarre thing.
Yes. And I think, you know, people need to know what it is they want to do and know where that's possible, where that's feasible. And so in that sense, it's why I will never discourage an artist of any, you know, medium from coming to New York. Absolutely. Come. Find out if this is a place where you can do your work. But I do think that I see a lot of us overstaying our welcome. It's something I'm just... I see too many of us allowing ourselves to be robbed of our energy and our sense of purpose and our joy by a place that doesn't feed us. And I am determined to be fed. I am determined to be healthy. And I am determined to be a member of a community that values the work that is being that I and others are doing, and it's unfortunate that I've seen personally too many or my share of brilliant artists who cannot find the sheer space to be able to open their brains, their brilliant brains up, to let all of that magic out. And I think, you know, we're living in a time when there's so many of us. I mean, the fact of the matter is to leave would actually be doing New York a favor, because the New York market is a bull market.
Saturated.
There are just too many of us here, right? For New York's own sake, it would actually be helpful. But there are so many of us. And I think it's time for us to start changing the narrative of what it means to be successful and what it means to make it. I think what all of these conservatory programs are making possible is a national revival, a national arts movement. And it's time for us to start thinking that way.
Okay, this is when I read this quote to you.
Ah!
I had this, and this just came up. I love Patti Smith. I'm obsessed, as
Patti!
People know.
Yes!
Go read Just Kids right now. But this was a quote I found of hers that she gave on some Japanese television interview in 1978.
Mm.
I believe that this planet, hasn't had its golden age. Everybody says it's finished. Art's finished. Rock and roll is dead. God is dead. Fuck that. This is my chance in the world. I didn't live back there in Mesopotamia. I wasn't there in the Garden of Eden. I wasn't there with Emperor Han. I'm right here, right now, and I want now to be the golden age.
Mm.
If only each generation would realize that the time for greatness is right now when they're alive. The time to flower is now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, ma'am. Oh,
and
yes,
you brought
ma'am.
It
that's
right
incredible.
Around and perfectly put
and
that in.
That's incredible. And the thing about it is that not only do I agree with her, but I actually think it's happening. I think that this generation, and I'm a little older so than the generation of young artists that are, you know, flocking to cities right now. But I'm so amazed by the bravery and the creativity and the abandon that young artists are attacking the task of creating work. And quite frankly, I'm being instructed by watching that, you know, and seeing that energy and going, well, yeah, and there are enough of us, you know, just thinking in theater, there's something actually rather remarkable that's happening in regional theater right now, where there's all this incredible, adventurous, work that's happening that is not ego-driven, that is about interacting in really exciting, novel, open-hearted ways with the communities that those places are serving. And I find it incredibly exciting. And so for that, I'm like, hell yeah, let's go back out into the regions. It's time to do it. Those institutions are ready for us. They want our energy. Those cities are ready for us because those cities are refashioning themselves, are finding new identities for themselves. And that's all the energy and the innovation that's happening among this new generation needs to go out.
There's also just so many people in this country. And I feel like if the center of the arts is in New York, just how many people are not being... I mean, I know there's art going on across the country, but if everyone's here in New York...
Yes, right. Right.
How many people who are not artists, because a lot of times here in the city, I feel like the work you do is only for other artists.
So, but we're just talking to
one
another.
If you can find the way to really reach audiences of people who are living their lives, that's the main goal of art, you know, to touch people's lives.
Yeah. Go be evangelicals.
To see things in a different way. It's the only time we'll say that.
Yes, go be evangelicals of art. Yes, absolutely. Go convert the world.
This is a big question for me too, this location question. So you're definitely helping me think about it.
Yeah.
After 10 years being in New York, we're definitely evaluating and reevaluating.
I don't know what it is, but I have this personal affection for all of these, towns that were big industry towns that are, just now figuring out what that post-industrial identity is. You go in and you see these little flickers of revival energy happening and novel use of old spaces. And I just find that so incredibly rich, that quite frankly, it's dizzying, as far as even trying to figure out, where do you land? Which one do you choose as your home?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that those places want us. Mm. They want us. They want to be informed by us. They want to inform us. They want,
Is that something that you find daunting at all? Like the fact that, New York is an incredibly liberal place, at least the worlds within New York that we live in. And growing up in the Midwest, I know that there are a lot of places that are not as accepting of the diversity and openness that is normal for us. Does that daunt you at all?
It does. But then I'm actually reminded that it's that kind of separating away from one another that is making that possible in the first place, and that we have to engage the opposite energy, that we actually do have to pursue the person on the opposite side of the fence.
Or they never have any reason to change.
Right. I have deep respect for conservative values, conservative principles, because I think that they're beautiful, and I think that without those values of liberty and ingenuity and hard work and freedom, that this country wouldn't be great. And this country is great. Imperfections aside, it is a great country. And so I find myself actually tending to have more fun talking to conservatives than I do lately talking to liberals, because I kind of can go, all right, yes, we're going to go down this, stretch of topics, and we're going to agree on every single one. That doesn't do anything new for me. That doesn't change me, and that doesn't make me grow. So I've been having a lot of fun talking to my conservative friends, and really trying to come to an understanding of what that value system is and what it prioritizes, mm-hmm. and to see the true value, because there is innate value in the system, and then begin a dialogue about, well, how do we meet one another, mm-hmm. and how do we create solutions that we can negotiate in good faith? Yeah. Which is not new to this country, you know. So it's not, it's by no means a new thing. Like it's not hard. We've just made it hard, it seems. So I guess in a certain sense, I'm being made more excited by that opportunity. Yeah. And how do we as artists create work that's open enough to be welcoming to people of different points of view, even as we assert our own? I actually have a special fondness for artists that are conservative. I have a special pleasure for them because they're a minority.
It's true.
Yeah. And in our universe, they tend to be the underdogs, and I love an underdog. So I love engaging with them and finding out their experience, because it ends up being that often their experience as a conservative in a liberal setting is similar to my experience as a gay boy growing up in Trinidad and Tobago, or as a black man living in America. Mm-hmm. So I end up figuring out that, oh, wow, we actually have more in common. And what we want is actually so much more binding than it is separating, if we can actually just get past the rhetoric.
Right. I think that's the tricky part, is that the really negative, hurtful things that have been tied to fundamental mm-hmm. principles that might mm-hmm. be completely logical.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you just need to get past all of that.
Yeah. And that we need to engage one another as people we have affection and empathy for. I mean, Pope Francis, damn it.
How does your family feel about you being an artist, or how do they relate to that?
Yeah.
To your life?
Yes. Yeah. They've been bewildered mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. It's been a challenge.
How old were you when you started dance or any sort of?
I was 26.
Not until
when
older.
I took my first dance class.
Wow.
I had been away from school. I'd moved to the States when I was 20. I'd been in and out of school because I was trying to do the respectable thing mm-hmm. and be a professional, and it wasn't working. So for different reasons, I had taken a lot of even more time off, and then went to Brown University as a resumed undergraduate education student, and 2 weeks before my 26th birthday, took my first dance class, and it changed my life. Mm. And I had done it as a, I told myself if I got in to Brown, I would take this dance class. I would go and study philosophy, and be respectable and work towards becoming a professor. That would be my thing. So I'd be like, well, I'm engaging thought.
And then the little treat
thought.
To yourself
right,
is this
yes,
dance
but
class.
But this dance class, I'm going to just take this little dance class on the side. And it changed my life. Mm. And so I think it was very unexpected. That said, you know, I have family members who've been involved in the arts. My eldest sister went to Juilliard, you know, was a dancer in New York. You know,
I don't think I knew
has,
that.
Has had a very successful Broadway career.
Wow.
Well, actually, even she at first, my parents intended her to be a lawyer.
Isn't that handy how your parents get to select your future for you?
Yeah. So... And it was partly collaborative. It was like, okay, so we're not going to take this dance thing seriously. So what do you want to do? And they were like, well, yes, it seems like law would be good for you. And she was like, well, okay, I really want to dance. And at some point she came to New York and auditioned for Juilliard and then called home and said, hey, well, look, this has happened. and this is where we're going. And my poor mom had to like come up and take care of it, you know, make it okay. Right. Figure out how we're going to make this, how we're going to make this work. And she was, you know, tremendously successful.
Wow.
And I was looking at all of this as a teenager, having no clue what I would do with my life, because I had been drawing and singing in church choirs and Catholic church choirs, mm-hmm. As a kid, and feeling profoundly moved every time I got to do those things. And then, you know, got to secondary school, and puberty and adolescence, and was told, nope, you can't do any of those things anymore. Now it's time to fashion yourself into a citizen, into a man. And therefore, instead of taking art, you will do geography or French,
mm-hmm.
So I was really quite clueless, and so when I finally somehow the arts kept happening. So I finished secondary school, didn't know what I was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
I had no sense of direction, because really the thing that was who I was had been kind of taken away, and my dad actually helped get me a job. An internship at a newspaper, because his school buddy was one of the editors. And so I do this internship, and I'd always been good at writing, and started on the news desk, and inevitably ended up writing about the arts, and ended up becoming a theater and dance critic at the age of 19.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Was like this big theater and dance critic in my little country, writing about something I knew nothing about, because I had not ever acted or danced. So it kept pulling, and then I would push away, and I would, you know, I came to the States and was like, well, okay, international relations, we'll do that. And then it kept coming. So, you know, and the conversations with my family had always been about, okay, let's figure out the thing that will be a sensible career that actually makes use of your skills. I mean, they, you know, my parents weren't ignoring who I was completely, mm-hmm. you know, they're like, we think you could make a good diplomat. So let's do that. You know, you know, so for a time it was like, okay, I'll join the UN, you know, and so they were just completely bewildered. I'd gotten back into Brown. Everyone thought everything was going to be great. And then here he is, he spoils everything. And,
oh my goodness.
Right. And is dancing.
Were they angry about it?
Oh, they were livid. But I think more than that, they were confused. They were just confused and lost, because they were concerned for me, and it continues to be the case.
Yeah.
So it's a constant negotiation of how are you going to be okay?
Yep.
And my mother, bless her heart, she knows me. So she said to me very early on, acting? I don't know if you can stand the rejection. And she's been proven right.
Right. So she doesn't really understand the world, but she
understands the world.
The center of it, yeah.
You know, so it's always kind of been a kind of, well, move forward at your own peril. And so it's been tricky. It's been a tricky balance. I mean, I come from a very homophobic culture,
mm-hmm.
and my family is a deeply religious Catholic family, and my artistry is immensely informed by my experience of my sexuality,
right.
As a persecuted one. So it's difficult. It's hard. It's hard for us to be able to transcend the choices that I've made,
mm-hmm.
to insist that I'm going to be vociferous.
Do you go back often?
Not often. Every 3 or 4 years. My mm-hmm. sisters go once and twice a year. They, you know, they're there a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm not. Because it's not easy. It's not easy to go back. And I have dear friends, you know, who are there and who are working and who are being brave. And really,
were you out when you were living there?
I I was as out as one tends to get, which means that I participated in the gay community in Trinidad and Tobago, which is very small, mm-hmm. And also very intimate, and at least my experience of it was that it was a very tightly knit community. So I think I came out, or, you know, started dating and started engaging my sexuality in actually a really beautiful environment in that regard, because I was so well taken care of,
right,
by the people around me. And I was so well supported in that regard. My parents thought I was crazy. I didn't come out to them, but they knew something big was happening and they didn't know what it was. And they were really worried. But I was, you know, I had boyfriends, mm-hmm. I had a gay family around me. So in that respect, and it was an intimate society. So, in that regard, it was actually kind of wonderful.
It was just outside of that group.
It was just outside of that group. You had to be very discreet, mm-hmm. About, how you shared things. And then there were, you know, the few people who were, you know, very, very vociferous about who they were. And I had great admiration for them, because, you know, coming from the social background that I came from, where my parents were people who came from humble beginnings, and were fashioning very successful lives for themselves, mm-hmm. and you know, were people who are people who are deeply respected in their communities. There was a certain kind of responsibility, you know, foisted onto us to fulfill a trajectory, mm-hmm. And nothing could be further from that, you know. So it was a really tough balance of how do I honor my family and honor myself, and it's something that I'm actually still figuring out.
Of course.
And it's only been within the past few years that I've been able to reach a point of saying, I am unapologetic, and I am happy to be unapologetic, and confident that that happy, generous, unapologetic sense of myself, mm-hmm. is actually the only one that can return to my home and have any kind of positive impact on the evolution that's happening there. And there is an evolution happening there.
Since you've moved.
Yes.
Things are probably at least a little different.
It's actually quite different. And once again, this new generation of young people, mm-hmm. who are just so, have such clear sense of purpose about what their lives are about and how they want to affect the world, and mm-hmm. and how much smarter they are than we are, you know, than us older or not so young people are, you know, it's so inspiring. It's mm-hmm. so inspiring. So we'll see. We'll see. It's all an evolution.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's always interesting, I feel like, for an artist to hear about their family and then their chosen family.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I've been so lucky, so, so lucky to have a really, really deeply supportive and large chosen family. Mm-hmm. And going back to our original question about dark places, build your family and then rely on them. Actually be entitled about relying on the family that you build, that if yeah. you nurture a family in a way that's generous, that family is not only ready, they are enthusiastic. They demand of you that you demand of them,
yeah.
you know, and so therefore do it. That you honor yourself and you honor them by relying on them.
Yeah.
Certainly in a context like this, where everything's supposed, you know, you're driven and you have to be self-sufficient and, mm-hmm. and have clear sense of purpose, it can feel like a huge failure to need help. And what I'm beginning to understand is needing help and asking for it can actually be the most generous thing you can
yes.
do. Yeah.
Yes, I'm learning that as well.
Yeah.
That was part of what starting this whole conversation on the compass was about too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just being honest about needing help.
Yeah. And we end up discovering that we're all in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the midst of success.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've been learning that more and more too, just that you never know what someone else is going through.
Yes. Yeah.
Even if it seems like they just got the biggest opportunity of their careers.
Yeah.
You don't know about their personal life.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. I you know, the biggest career opportunity that I've had, I remember being in the middle of it and feeling very isolated,
mm-hmm.
Because I was a fresh graduate, relatively, and I had a lot of friends who were still struggling just to have any foothold in the city, and there I was making money, you know,
yeah.
I felt guilty, you know, and felt alone and it isolated me and also because you on the inside you discover that we. Even on the inside of, you know, like the bubble that's supposed to be success, people are afraid and lonely and vulnerable and protective and, you know, all the things that we experience on the outside
yeah.
of it, that nothing, it, that the condition doesn't change.
Yeah.
It's only the circumstances that change. So we have to reach out, keep reaching out, because it'll keep us afloat.
This is a change of topic, but I wanted to ask you about your work with the 52nd Street Project.
Oh, my God.
And how that's figured into you building a life for yourself,
mm-hmm.
a fulfilling life for yourself as an artist, but
mm-hmm.
maybe you aren't working
mm-hmm.
On a project yourself.
So this past year, I've done a couple stints with the 52nd Street Project, which is an incredible organization, and it has revolutionized my life and my artistry. We all joke that the 52nd Street Project announces itself as a program to mm-hmm. give theatrical opportunities for young people as a way to engage them, you know, in a different way. But that, in fact, what it is for, you know, frustrated actors that these kids volunteer to bring light back into the lives of frustrated actors. Because, first of all, that place, it's just such an oasis of generosity. And it just reconnects you to why we do what we do. And why we do what we do is in order to make connections with other human beings about what's all going on inside of us, what our internal lives are,
right.
and how they play out. And so I started doing stuff with them because I had free time, and I thought, well, let's try to be useful. And rather what happened was that they gave me this tremendous gift of me of reconnecting me with myself as a holistic artist, because I was directing two young actors, and I got to mentor them, and I got to guide them and teach them a couple things.
Mm-hmm.
But more than anything else, I got to be taught by them about just what it means to be open and available again. And I discovered that volunteering is the most selfish thing you can do. and that it's hugely restorative, and it can be addictive in the best possible way. And they're an incredible organization. So I'd say find organizations and volunteer with them if you can. It just adds a whole other dimension to. And I mean, as a dancer, as I was training, I was also being taught immediately. I was working at Brown with an organization called the American Dance Legacy Initiative. And their work has been all about how do we make the master choreography of American dance available and accessible to people in a broad spectrum of the world, so that an elementary student mm-hmm. can be doing, you know, the work of the most celebrated choreographer and have that be part of their education. And part of it was a huge moment for me in unlocking myself as an artist, because just to work with the best material just demands a different kind of artistry from you and teaches you in a different way. So I progressed very fast because of this material that I was working with. And as you're working with that material, you're being taught that you have to be ready to teach it and pass it on to the next person.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yes, that art is at its best when it's constantly moving. And the more we make it available to move through the society, the healthier everyone is.
Yeah.
And the healthier the arts is, and the more audiences we have. Mm-hmm. I mean, it, again, doing the most generous work is the most selfish thing you can do. And so teaching was a big part of that. And it was something that when I became an actor, that that hadn't been part of my experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so working with 52nd Street Project reminded me of how important those two things are together, and that teaching and mentoring makes you a better artist, and makes you a better participant in our work.
Yeah.
And it's been hugely liberating, hugely, hugely liberating and informative. So do it.
Well, I've kept you for a long time, so I'm going to quickly ask you the last few things. Are there any really tangible things that you reach to on like a day-to-day level? If you're having a dark day, is there a book that you reread? Is there something that just brings you out of it? Music, a place you go to?
Yeah. When I'm being good, when I'm being disciplined, I do engage a meditative practice that's helpful. That's okay. Hugely yeah. helpful. It's so, so helpful. And actually, it's an extension of a larger principle, which is to find your anchor. Find your mm-hmm. anchor and allow your anchor to be available to you, whatever the circumstances are, outside circumstances. I think part of the biggest challenge of our lives is that we are creatures of habit. You know, we want to have a routine that we can rely on. And we do this work in which you might have you might get hired for something that's one day
mm-hmm.
or 2 months, or as in, you know, my experience with War Horse, 2 years. And then it ends. And a huge thing that I'm learning is that you have to be willing. You have to have a way out of every project that you do.
A soft landing.
A soft landing.
Yeah.
And a routine for saying goodbye. We create these things that are mm-hmm. so intimate to us. You know, these characters that become real people in our lives, and then we're just expected to move on. And you really do. I learned that the hard way, that you really do have to have a process for coming out of that experience, each one of those experiences. And so having the anchor, that is the one thing that you can latch on to, be it a meditative practice, be it going running, which is a meditative practice, being one of my favorite things to do is to just go to the Metropolitan Museum, give them a buck, uh-huh. and wander around.
Yes.
It's, oh my gosh, it makes such a huge difference in my life to be able mm-hmm. to do that. You know, it's like, it's kind of my safe place in the city, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, hell can be breaking loose. I can just go in there, give them the dollar, and roam around, and everything will be okay. So it's like finding that physical place that is your reset button, but also finding some kind of daily practice, even if it is I get up, I make my bed, I brew my coffee,
mm-hmm.
and I sit with a book for 20 minutes. the rest of the day can be all chaos. But if you know that there's that one thing that you can hold on to, I think it makes a huge difference. And it's the thing that is most tempting to let go of when things get hard. So it's the thing that we, when things are going well, we need to put into practice with incredible discipline. Because it's the discipline that we establish during the good times that makes it possible to continue it, sustain it, in those dark moments.
Really smart.
And it's the thing that anchors us, I think, to reality and to sanity.
Yes, more importantly.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh my goodness, I could talk to you all day.
I could talk to you all day.
You've made my day.
Oh my gosh.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I love you.
You too. Thank you for listening to the Compass Podcast. I'm Leah Walsh. More episodes are coming soon. Please look for us on Facebook and iTunes. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller, music by Brendan Spieth, audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.